This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project. Now, if I don't say this at the start, I'm going to get in trouble from the team. We're on YouTube now. So the YouTube channel, we've started putting more content out there, which is kind of like the full-length episodes if you want to watch them. I know some people have been really asking for the YouTube stuff, and then snippets from some of our interviews as well.
If you haven't been there before, it's youtube.com. It's kind of like a red symbol.
Yeah. Or if you want the other side, it's RedTube, R-E-D-T. Okay, so...
We're up there as well.
No, but seriously, controversial statement. So, I'm getting my hair cut, as usual, in the barbershop. Song comes on. Dude, Champagne Supernova by Oasis, right? Amazing song. And it's like a real throwback song. And it made me think about some other artists that are doing... that were kind of... Not that era exactly, but that type of music. And I started looking through some playlists. There were some artists like Jet. That was like a really big one. This Evermore was a big one at the time. And then... And forgive the probably international audience that might not know these artists, but then one band came to mind, and I honestly, you're gonna have to, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I'm sure I'm gonna get some mad shit from this, especially from Americans, but I never saw what the whole deal and problem was with Nickelback.
As in, like, yeah, everyone makes fun of it, right?
Yeah, everyone makes fun of it.
I also don't get it.
I don't get it. Yeah, I think, from what I understand, I think it's a Canadian thing.
I was left out of the joke.
I think it's because they're Canadian that the Americans make fun of them. That is what I think the crux of it is. I could be wrong completely, but for any American listening, because I know that's where the memes come out of and people make fun of Nickelback for. I don't think so. But dude, they were a huge band. Like, they were massively successful. They had like the theme song for Spider-Man when Spider-Man was like for Netflix and shit. That was a huge movie.
Must be like weird just being like very rich, very successful, but also just being made fun of like from all ends of the internet.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, the music is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. The guy has a mad voice. He can sing, obviously. I mean, yeah, he's kind of got like a lame haircut and it's kind of corny, but that's so what? That's just like how artists are. Yeah. And I don't get it. I don't get what the controversy is with Nickelback. Maybe someone can enlighten us on what the Nickelback issue is, because down under in Australia, we have no issue with him. We think they're good. They're good musicians, but I don't know. The world does not seem to agree. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. So on earlier in the week, I had some really cool notes that I took because I got the privileged opportunity to. So we're part of like a local business group, Raph and I, and got an opportunity to speak to the business owners in the club. Digital conversation is what they call it, on sleep. Now, obviously, performance, high performance for us means more reps, more weight, leaner body composition, but sleep for high performance for business owners means like more money, more revenue, longer hours, you know, more successful business. And so that was kind of the angle we came in at, because, you know, I don't think that we're going to like listen that much to training. The last thing they want to do is go to a networking business club and be told they need to do fitness. But I actually had some really interesting, because I was like gathering information for the sleep presentation. I actually thought it was really good info that I thought I'd share with the listeners again, because obviously we love improving sleep. So one of the things that I wrote down I thought was really interesting in some of the research I was doing, it's mostly Matthew Walker's stuff, but still some other research out there as well. So in one study, subjects that slept for 7 hours, 10 days in a row, which is, again, quite a good sleep by most standards.
Is that sleep or time in bed?
I think it's sleep.
Yeah.
I think it's sleep. 10 days of sleep in a row. 10 days of 7 hours sleep in a row impaired brain function to the same degree of subjects that were awake for 24 hours straight.
Wow.
Isn't that fucking mind-blowing? And that's a lot of us. We're pretty much...
So the point of that is that short-term... So I've heard this before. Short-term sleep deprivation sometimes isn't quite as bad as like... Yeah, I just have to get to that medium term. In terms of sleep deprivation, because like you're saying that one whole night where you don't sleep at all, right? Which you might think would be like, I'm so bad, I can't operate at all.
Yeah.
That's actually only just as bad as missing a little bit of sleep for a whole week in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what's worse, but it's both bad. The next one was 20 to 30% sleep deprivation in male subjects had a 50% decrease on average in testosterone in just 3 days.
Yeah.
So if you slept 7 hours, then it would be, what's that, 5 hours? Just about around that hour, which is, yeah, it's pretty significant sleep deprivation, but a 50% decrease in testosterone, that is a lot. That is a lot of testosterone to lose. I mean, when you inject testosterone, how much of an increase is it on your natural levels?
I think they can get up to a 30% increase in testosterone.
From injecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're losing what you would can hardly make up in injections. I'm sure you could inject, you know, ridiculous amounts if you want, like 10 times your normal testosterone. But I mean, most people use probably 1 to 2 times the normal amount.
Yeah.
So, it's significant. Anyway, next sleep stat was in subjects that slept less than 6 hours for one night had a 10 to 30% drop in time to exhaustion. What I find is so interesting about that is you think about most major sporting events, like where, you know, there's a title on the line or a medal on the line or a championship on the line. It's, you know, maybe in the regular season or a not so big event, maybe the athletes are used to and they don't feel the pressure as much and they get a full night's sleep. But surely in those big, big events, most of them are like not getting a full night's sleep. And their time to exhaustion, 10 to 30%. Now, they're obviously genetic freaks, so I'm sure they can, you know, they're different to the subjects studied in this and have more training and stuff, but still, you know, they're not putting out their best performance because, you know, that's why people say, you know, their best times are ever in training. It's probably because they're most well-rested, right? And there's other factors as well, but I just found that one was super interesting. And then probably...
Well, it probably gets overcome just from the fact that on the day, your motivation and excitement is like to a whole nother
level. Yeah, you got more adrenaline.
So it's like, yeah, so they're trying to, you know, they're probably a little bit sleep deprived, but they're making up for that with like, you know, the peaking of their training cycle and the adrenaline, all the other impacts as well.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. So the next one, last one I'll leave you with here is, I like this one, it's pretty interesting. 18 hours awake. So that would be from 6 a.m. to midnight, which is like fairly common. I would say some people
get it's like pretty early. It's a long day.
Yeah, it's just like a long day. 6 a.m. to midnight, you are considered legally drunk. By objective performance.
Yeah, and that's why they were saying it's like, I don't know if you heard that interview with him, with Matthew Walker. He was talking about how, so you're same as legally drunk, right? I can't remember exactly what, I think it's around like you have double the chance of dying in a car crash or crashing a car when you're legally drunk or this sleep deprived, right? And he was saying that if you have both at the same time, it like they're multiplied, not added.
Right.
So, say, obviously, at two, it's the same, right? So, if you're like double as likely to die because you just hit the legal limit of alcohol and you're 18 hours tired, then it's like you're 4 times more likely to die, right?
Okay.
But say you stay up even longer and now you're up for 24 hours and you're even more drunk. And now maybe the amount of alcohol you've drunk is you're 4 times more likely to crash and you're 4 times more likely to
It's not
to
eight crash times.
It's 16.
Mm.
And he's saying that's why like most accidents, obviously the alcohol was involved and what they don't report in the media was like fatigue was involved.
Because,
you know, most times it's late at night when you're driving home and you may have been up, nearly 24 hours at that point. So you're tired and drunk. And he was even saying like a lot of the time he thinks tired is a bigger factor because maybe they're just over the limit on alcohol early in the morning, but they're very, very tired. And it's just like interesting the way you look at it is like the alcohol is the one everybody cares about.
Yeah.
And the fatigue, there's like no penalty.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you do, and often your insurance won't even cover you because you've just gone over the limit on alcohol. But really, like the insurance should not cover you because you drove so tired.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. There's got to be a way, and you imagine there will be in the future where cars becoming more automated, which is why we need automated cars, right? Because people are getting into their cars tired. 18 hours, they're legally drunk.
I think the only reason they don't, it's not outlawed, it's just because they can't test it.
That's what I mean. And when cars get smarter with facial recognition and scanning and stuff and tired, I mean, if our phones, you watch Social Dilemma, if our phones can tell what kind of mood we're in already based off some of the data, like to a 1% degree accuracy, what mood we're in, our phone, surely our cars are going to figure out, it's going to look at like blinking speed, right? Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. Maybe like how open your eyes normally are and what percentage they are closed.
Yeah, I think blinking could do it because they talk about when you get tired, you have... What you die from is like microsleep. So, people don't actually fall asleep behind the wheel, right? Unless you're like crazy tired or you're driving a Tesla.
No, I've heard some people fall asleep behind the wheel. Yeah.
But I think it's what they say is you have microsleeps, whereas where you drop out for a tiny bit. You know, you drop out for like a second or 2 seconds, right? Yeah. It's like a really... Oh, did I just like nearly go to sleep then? That's what happens. Just when you're going 120 kilometers an hour, that you know you travel very quickly.
That's what ends it, yeah.
Yeah, and I would imagine in the future, the Tesla or whatever the car is will be able to just like measure that. And microsleeps, car just cuts out or just stops you driving.
Yeah, man, it's It's pretty scary. But yeah, I mean, it's as simple as like, hey, I got up in the morning early. I did some training. I went to work. It's Friday night. And then I went to my friend's place and we had a bit of a meeting. You know, we had a couple of drinks, but I'm not drunk. But now it's midnight. Now I'm driving home.
Mm.
That's a pretty normal scenario for most people. And you like can't keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
You like can't drive. You got an hour of driving to do. That's like, that is a recipe for disaster. Man, I was talking about this on Saturday night at dinner with some friends. And I was just like, the scariest thing for me, because I'm moving places, right? So the whole reason I love moving places is because I'm trying to make my life more convenient. And as you move places, I know you haven't done a lot of this. You've been relatively in the same area. It's always been convenient for you. But for me, you know, I was really inconvenient in the North Shore, and then I moved to the West, and then now that's become really inconvenient. Now I'm trying to move to the East because there are so many factors that besides just time that I really dislike about living in cities. I love cities. I'll never not live in a city, but one of the things that I dislike most about them is just traffic, right? Just traffic in general. It just feels like it's a very helpless feeling, you know, when I'm like, oh, I could just get out and run and like beat this here, or it's just so much lost time. I'd rather sit in the back of an Uber and be stuck in traffic so I can at least do something, right? And it made me think of all the other experiences that I have on the road that I really dislike. And it's funny because when you don't drive much, you don't realize until you get back into driving regularly how much stuff that you kind of just accept is dangerous and it's okay. Because you kind of like, if you drive regularly, if you drive every day, you know, 20, 30 minutes through traffic and stuff, people say, oh, you know, it's more deadly to get in a car than it is to catch coronavirus or whatever. No, it's not. No, it's not. But that's because you're just used to that risk, right? You're just used to all that chaos on the road.
Well, but I think currently they say in New South Wales, the average is that you would drive to die in a car crash. You'd have to drive every day for 200 years. That's when it becomes like more likely for you to die in a car crash.
For 200 years?
200 years.
That's not that likely.
No, but that's not that unlikely either.
Isn't that like
you drive a lot for probably 70 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
But this was like a lot more driving the average person. I think it was driving like all day. So it's the equivalent time on the road.
Oh, okay.
So it was like all day driving for 200, for 200 years. So
it would be guaranteed death at the end of that.
No, it's not guaranteed. It becomes I think more than 50% chance.
Oh, okay. Which is high.
Yeah, really high.
Which is high. Anyway, so like, I thought about the scariest part about being on the road, hands down, is being around trucks.
Mm.
Being around massive trucks, because you think about those guys, right? I didn't realize trucking is transportation is the number one job in America. It's the most popular job in America.
I don't know if it's the most popular. I guess but not popular in the sense of like people like it.
No. Yeah, it's like the most. I don't know.
Most common
job. Yeah. But because you think about these guys, right? A lot of them. Majority of them. So my uncle is paramedic, and he said, you know, you get the blood work of people that crash on the road, right? Mm. So it's like, okay, was alcohol? Was it drugs involved? Blah blah blah. And he's like, it's like all of the above. It's like over 95% of cases of truck drivers that crash or they get involved in some accident. They're not the ones dying, right? Yeah. They're normally killing someone. They're driving a giant fucking truck, right? That's amphetamines to stay awake. Wow. So you think about these guys, right? Because they're incentivized, because there are laws. It's like, okay, 14 hours straight, it's like you have to pull over no matter where you are, no matter what, you have to sleep. A lot of those guys just push past it, right? The subcontractors, because they find a loophole where they can just keep making more money. Because the trucking company will come in, say it's like a long 12-hour stint, and you're supposed to go home and rest for whatever, 8 hours. And he goes, I'll pay you double if you go back.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So they're like, double. How are you going to stay awake for that long? Course, You're going to take something that's stronger than coffee, right? Coffee just stops working at some point. So there's a lot of these guys take meth. That's why it's like 3 to 5 years. I think it's like 5 years after they retire. Like it's like a 60, 70% suicide rate or something. Because a lot of them are drug addicts, right? From using the methamphetamine to stay awake. But you got to drive next to these guys. Like, they're driving in the city. And I'm just thinking to myself, this guy's cracked out. He's tired. And he's driving a fucking tank. And he's going to... Like he could just easily run you over. So that is honestly like the thing that scares me most about driving. Bit of a tangent, but yeah, I like moving closer so I can just stay to public transport like trains and stuff just because they feel way safer, right?
Yeah, I don't know how people cycle for fitness next to trucks.
Oh my God. Hold, you do that.
No, I cycle, but I go nowhere near trucks. People do like long rides.
You know, you just cycle around the city. Yeah, like you're talking about like trucks. Highway.
Did you get sucked under by the wind?
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. So okay, so it's been a week or so now since we reviewed social dilemma. Have you encountered anyone since who's watched that? Because I think it's been hugely popular that has quit social media.
No,
not a single person.
Not a single person.
Have you encountered people that have watched it and chosen not to quit social media?
Yes, everybody has chosen not to quit
social media. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I've met 3 people that have quit everything.
Fuck.
Yeah, they turned it all off, deleted it, everything. Tell you what, they're a week in and they're like, my life has never been better. Significant reduction in anxiety. That's like the big one they've been saying. And the other thing is just way more productive.
Mm.
Way more productive. So I made some changes because I started reviewing my screen time and I looked at Instagram as the main culprit. So I was averaging 8.5 hours of Instagram a week.
Fuck,
it's a lot, right? It's a lot. It's a lot. Jeez,
if you had to get that all done in one day.
Yeah. So the only thing that I really use it for that is useful, obviously, is posting for the business stuff, interacting on comments, and then messages for just whoever's messaging me. And then everything else is kind of like a bit wasted time or whatever. So obviously, all the notifications are off with me and I'm trying not to use it as much. But honestly, I think just the awareness of the screen time has already brought it down dramatically. So like the last 2 days since I checked it, Monday and Sunday. So I checked it on like Sunday morning. It's down by like 68%, the amount I'm using it.
Well, you know, I think with that stuff, it's like the amount of time, I reckon, probably not, obviously, up to a certain point is not the most important thing. I think it's just like you notice it most when you look at other people. It's the frequency of the checking it.
I think.
Like if you do half an hour in a day, but it's like 31 minute slots, like just at the, like while you're driving or like, you know, just like all these different times, that is like, it pulls you off course the most.
Yeah.
Cause you look at it for like 5 seconds and then you like think about it maybe for like the next 5 or 6 minutes. So it just, you know, interrupts you the most. Whereas I would imagine, if you sat down for half an hour at the end of the day and you just scrolled for half an hour, it's like, probably not maybe the best half an hour ever, but it's just half an hour of it.
You know?
And like, it's, I think that is what upsets people the most, because that's what's really different about it compared to TV. Was you just like didn't pull out the TV every minute randomly during class and just like watch a little bit of TV. You would just like, you just get home and then you would veg out and watch hours of TV.
Yeah.
And I would imagine
it's TV time.
Yeah. If you did it similar, it wouldn't be quite as disruptive for people.
Remember when your parents were like, all right, it's TV time. Like it was like, okay, this is the time where we're all accepting that we're going to watch TV. Yeah. Whereas like now, there's no like phone time or like Instagram time. No. It's like, no, whenever you're bored, you can do it. Okay, so let me just read off this this research from the study. I just pulled this book out because, so this chapter is called Waste is a Crime. So this book is all about like human performance and productivity. It's more of a business book, but it applies to everyone. So they did this research study on subjects to do with multitasking. There's a table here, and so it's got the first column is number of simultaneous projects, right, that you're trying to get done at the same time. So this is not necessarily multitasking the 5 projects, but it's like, okay, we've got the next month of work. Here's 1 project to do. Here's 2 projects, 3, 4, 5. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The next column is percent of time available per project, okay? And then the third column is loss to context switching. So basically what that means is because you have multiple projects going, how much time is lost in between from you trying to switch your brain over to a different mode to think about a different project, different set of problems, maybe different people involved, different solutions, whatever it might be.
I'll give you my same example. Stupid people that change from project fitness to project body too often. Can't change projects.
No, but they're not doing 2 at the same time. They're doing 1 at a time. Yeah, they're doing 1 at a time. So it's number of simultaneous projects. Yeah. So an example would be, I guess for some people, the example they've used in this book sometimes would be like a wedding, for example, right? You're trying to organize your wedding. Okay, and there's like multiple aspects to getting a wedding ready. There's like flowers, there's DJ, there's food, there's location. There's
finding a partner.
Bridal party. Yeah, it's all that stuff, right? And if you, in this research, you would get done faster if, say, you broke it down. It's like 3-day chunks, right? So it's like, all right, for these next 3 days, like we do flowers. These next 3 days, we're going to do the music. The next 3 days, we're going to do the food. Next 3 days is going to be a location, right? So think of it that way. That would be 1 simultaneous project versus, okay, we're going to do all these 5 things this week, right? So bouncing between those, you would get a percent of context switching. So, and this is in the research. So 1 number of simultaneous projects, 1 percent of time available per project, 100%. Pretty straightforward. Lost the context switching, 0. 1 project.
Yeah.
Interesting. 2, 40% available per project. Lost the context switching, 20%. Number of simultaneous projects, 3%. Percent of time available per project, 20%. Lost to context switching, 40%. 4, 10%. Lost to context switching, 60%. And finally, 5 simultaneous projects, percent of time available per project, only 5%, because you lose 75% of your time due to context switching.
Just switching tasks.
We cannot multitask. It is like, it's just, it's the facts are there. Like, it's ridiculous. If you multitask, like, you are losing.
But, yeah, I would say it's honestly similar with training. It's usually like that as well. You know, as soon as someone tells you one goal, you're like, oh, it's a probably good chance you'll be able to knock this out.
Yeah.
Two, it's like, okay, yeah, like you probably get around to both these. As soon as someone's got like 5 goals, I'm like, oh, it's guaranteed failure.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, it's crazy. Like the even having 2 goals is like a bit of a stretch, depending on how they're working with each other. But it is interesting. So last night I was training with Sonny Webster. He just clean and jerked 200 kilos. And so he's like, oh, you know, I was like a full focus on the weight. So I tried to stay under 100 kilos. We stayed under 100 kilos, but he's just eating like a pig. He's like, I was just getting as fat as possible. Mm. He's like, I was keeping my steps under 2,000 a day. Like I was just all focused on strength. Anyway, so we get this workout. We do some strength work. He smashes it. And then we do these sprint workouts. Now, here's the problem. Here's how you end up being in a dangerous position when you haven't done fitness for a very long time. It's when you can go extremely hard because you've done some kind of power sport before. People that are like really weak and have no fitness, they have no chance of really killing themselves because they actually don't know how to tap into like high intensity because they've just never done it, right?
Yeah.
People that are in danger like can build fitness over time. They just know how to go all out like a weightlifter, right? Someone who knows how to express power really well. Anyway, so one of the workouts is 2 minutes max calorie row. I forgot how painful that 2 minutes max calorie row is, right? He goes, ham on the roll, right? It's going nuts. And you know when someone is in so much pain that they're going like full stoic? They don't want to show any pain because they're in so much pain. They've gotten to the point, they're like, I can't show any pain because if I was to show anyone what level of pain I'm in, I might scare them. And he gets off the roll and then, you know when they got the glassy eyes?
Yep.
You just can't see him. And he just couldn't move. He just could not move. So, but he had to start the next workout. The next workout was burpee dumbbell step overs, like the worst movement ever. And he does like 3 reps. And he's like, I'll be back. Puked everywhere. I'm like, welcome back to fitness. Can you believe that? It's been like, you know, 3 or 4 days, or 2 months, no fitness really. 3 or 4 days, he gets back into fitness and his welcome back into it is puking.
I do think there's like a genetic predisposition towards puking. Like I never really puked. But there'd always be like some people on any team that were just like, that's the guy that pukes, you know?
Like, it's like Stever.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so good at puking. Always be someone on the rugby team like doing stair runs like that guy's going to puke. That guy's going to, for sure.
And he wouldn't always puke.
Not always, but you know, it's the most likely person to puke.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone gets sick, right?
Yeah, but I think some people have like a predisposition to like puking
more.
Out.
Yeah, potentially. Hey, what do you think about like the, do you find it now you're sleeping, like as it gets warmer, your sleep's getting worse? Like, do you find that the transition between seasons is quite difficult?
Yeah, we have this devastating realization at home, which is Ziggy, my son, like fucking, and we confirmed this last night, wakes up all night if we have the fan on.
Oh,
so we like put the fan on once, like that was the worst night, up like 5 times in the night. I was like, could have been the fan, but I don't know. It's like, cool down again. Then last night was probably the first really warm night we've had in Sydney for a long time. We're like, okay, we've got to put the fan on. Like it's warm. Another really bad night. So I think it's like, I have no
idea. Oh my God.
Hopefully he's okay.
How warm is he? Like, is he like a little heat pack?
Yeah, he is, but he's on the other side. He's like, I keep him pretty far from me, so I don't squash him. I don't think he's as warm as I am.
What if you just have, is it the noise or is it the feeling of the fan?
I don't know. I don't think it's the noise. No, I don't think it is because most, nearly all baby sleeping technology is around like white noise.
Okay.
Because white noise really helps them sleep because like in the womb, it's really loud apparently. So I don't think it's the noise. I guess it's the wind. So I guess maybe in the womb there's like no wind.
Hmm. There isn't. There is.
No, if
there's
about,
no wind.
I think if you're about to fart, like wind comes past
them. It's confirmed, bro. There's no wind in the womb.
I don't think it's windy.
Wind. What's on the forecast today in the womb? Wind.
Oh, anyway, I'll give you a really good one just quickly while we're on the topic of Ziggy. So I was like, I'm going to put this like age old debate to bed, right? I was like, so he's never tried any food.
Okay.
Besides milk. But leave that aside. Never tried any foods. I was like, okay, I'm
just when do you introduce foods?
Like now, like okay. six, around 6 months. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to find out for sure. Like, should we be vegans or should we be meat eaters? So I'm going to let him try some vegetables. Now, he's got no preconceptions, right? Doesn't know anything about vegetables.
Oh, right.
Doesn't
know,
like, you know, doesn't know meat, doesn't know anything. I'm like, let's just see, like, just honest opinion. What should we be eating?
Because Ziggy's opinion right now determines all of humanity.
Well, he's just unbiased. Like, yeah. He's just like, face value, I don't know anything about, I'm just like a human blob, just straight here, I don't know anything about food. Like, I've got no emotional things around food.
Except the epigenetics, like, of his dad eating absurd amounts of meat.
I haven't even tried any food in the past. He's got, like, nothing to compare it against. I don't know the nutritional value of this food. I just want to, like, just as a natural... It's like if you gave a, you know, a cat some food, or like a dog some food in the wild. Like, you assume they're going to know what's right, food for you. Anyway, so this experiment went down this morning. I was like, I want to give him just plain broccoli and plain steak.
Was it both cooked or raw?
Nah, both cooked. I don't kill him. I think his digestive system is pretty average. So anyway, these are like tiny fucking pieces of it. Anyway, hated the broccoli, loved the steak.
Really?
Yeah, fucking loved it.
But did you like saute it in sauce and like salt it, or was it just no?
It was just off my plate. Yeah. Really? But it was like, I meshed it down, like I kind of rolled it in my fingers, so it was like easy to digest.
Does he have teeth yet?
No teeth. So the broccoli, like...
When does he get teeth?
It should be like right now.
Oh, okay.
He's not teething yet, but yeah, probably in the next month.
That's painful for them, right?
Yeah, I think it's painful for the parents because they're like, it's uncomfortable for them, it's uncomfortable for you because they're obviously upset about it. Broccoli went in and out like 8 times, gave up, would not have it. So I'm telling you, the steak, just swallowed it, went nuts and was like grabbing my plate to get more of it.
Really?
So, I don't know, vegan things not holding up for me.
So Paul Saladino would be very pleased right now. Very interesting. So before we dive into the listener questions, obviously... There's a strap on our wrist that we're a big fan of. I'll tell you what, I don't know what it is right now, but the popularity of the Whoop has, like, I feel like it's like quadrupled in my world.
I feel like they can just end sponsoring the show because, man, I see people wearing them all the time.
Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe it was the Tour de France.
Some of the riders are wearing Whoop.
Yeah, people have Whoop on the Tour de France fucking just cranking the strain every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
But... I mean, that's very mainstream, but like, yeah, I see people on the street now just like wearing Whoops.
Yeah. Well, in that business club, like, I think it's maybe my influence a little bit, but yeah, some of the staff there and some of the members are now wearing the Whoop because they're like, I think anyone that is even remotely interested in high performance wants a Whoop. Like, I'm telling you right now, the age-old saying, what you measure gets improved, or however it goes, is it just holds true every single time. As soon as you have awareness, as soon as you have objective data, there's
It's what you talked about with your screen time.
Exactly.
It's like already got better, right?
There's just something about humans and numbers that we always want to improve numbers, you know? And so I think anytime you can put a number on anything, I even spoke to the guys I'm in the leaderboard with. They're like, I am obsessed with it. Dude, they're so obsessed that like when they go up to get a pee, they want to know like what their sleep cycles have been so far. I'm like, no. Check it when you actually finish sleeping. But yeah, I just think it's almost good in an addictive way. And I would say that, yeah, anyone that has not picked up the Whoop yet, now is definitely the time. You're missing out on so much valuable data you can look to improve. And if you've listened to this podcast for a while and you're still sitting on the fence, I don't know why. You hear us talk about all the benefits of it. The magnesium one I talked about, increasing my recovery. Just all these different things that you can just end up learning about your body, which you would have never before. And it's so easy. It's so convenient. It picks up all the... You don't have to touch it. It just picks up all the data for you. You don't have to turn it on. You don't have to tap it. All you have to do is remember to charge it for 90 minutes every 5 days. So it's an incredible piece of technology. If you guys want to pick yours up, now is definitely the time. Start tracking data. You're just wasting precious recovery data, precious training time, to be honest. And you can pick it up at whoop.com. It's whoop.com. Our code is mindmuscle. It's one word, mindmuscle. And it's going to get you 15% off your order.
Yeah, and maybe it's probably time for a new strap. I think I've been wearing this for 6 months now.
Oh, yeah?
They hold up.
Maybe we'll order some new straps.
Okay, we got some listener questions here. Jules Cardamone, single greatest piece of advice you've received can be related to anything, business, training, life. Maybe we'll pick one of them here.
I wish I looked at this.
Very, very, very challenging question to start things off.
Maybe a better question... Okay.
Man, I'm going to tell you the best training one.
If you want to get big, eat the pig.
Second best. That's the second best. No, I think when I first started training, I think I was looking at it was Jim Wendler's stuff when I was first getting into it. Maybe not first, maybe like a couple of years in. And he was like, supplementary exercises are supplementary. And I was like, that was really good. Because like, I was like right at that initial point where I was like, oh, I think I'm going to go down the road of like getting into all these like extra exercises I can do. And I only had a squat rack and bar and dumbbells. So it wasn't a lot to get distracted with, but I was like, I could see where this was going. I was like, oh, I'm going to order bands, do like band squats, and I'm going to do this. And he was like, no, that shit is supplementary. The main shit is like your squats, deadlifts, and your chins and your bench press, right? And he's like, most days I just do that and I don't even bother with the rest of the shit. And like, that was just like a realization. It was like, hey, this is the main thing. Like, I'm not done with this because I've done it for 12 months now. I remember at the time he was even just like making, I was like, just got my bands to do banded squats. And he was like making fun of people that like squat less than 200 with banded squats. Like, just fucking squat, you retard. And I was like, you know what?
Oh, that's
what I'm doing. And I was like, put the bands away. I'm just going to keep doing the main exercises. And I think at the time where it got me, that was probably the best training advice.
That is some really good training advice. Man, I think it's pretty much impossible to say that there is one piece of, you know, amazing advice, or it's the single biggest, best piece of advice. Because, you know, all advice is weighted differently and is different in different contexts. But, you know, one of the things that I think has always kind of bounced around, and this is kind of a piece of advice that applies to not just training, but also applies to anything, work, life, whatever. And that is sort of like the extract for the, I can't remember who wrote it exactly, but I know the poem or the saying is like called, or the quote's called like the man in the arena. I think it's from one of the US presidents.
I think he's mentioned Theodore Roosevelt, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Anyway, but, I won't read off the whole thing, but it's that one where it's like, doesn't matter about the critics. It doesn't matter about like the people yelling at you or telling you how you did it wrong. What matters is like the person that's actually doing it. And I think that is like definitely with social media these days and definitely like with the internet, it has just become really easy to just judge people and sit back and be like the, you know, the couch critic, you know, the person that doesn't do anything, just judges everyone else on what they do. And I think it's just really, really important to always realize that the only thing that matters is that you're doing it and that you're showing up and doing it. I even said to some guys that were thinking about joining the gym, just some friends of mine, said to them, if you guys just show up, we'll take care of the rest. All you have to do is get yourself here. Once you get yourself here, you've got your program, you've got the coach, you got the other members of the community bring you here. It's like, that's really it. That's the crux of it. If you can just show up here, you know, 3 times a week, 85% of the year, you will get the result that you're getting. But just so many people just can't get themselves there to do the thing. And that's, you know, that's upsetting for me because really it's more than half is just showing up.
Do the thing. Chloe Hill, doing Project Body, but don't always make it to the gym every day. Thoughts on doing the upper and lower body session in one day? Will it stop progress doing them together rather than in different days? My answer here probably will make you happy. I think of all the different things you could be going after here, like strength, fitness, and aesthetics. Obviously you're going more for the aesthetics with the body program. The body program is the most flexible in terms of these sort of stuff. Like if you're on the fitness program, like you can get it all done in one day, but it's going to be some negative consequences if you're trying to do like all the
more negative consequences. Yeah,
for sure. And then it's strength as well. You know, you definitely could do the you know, some of the bench press heavy days and the squat heavy days on the same day, but it's just a certain amount of energy that you can bring to training and it gets tough after a certain time. I think body, the only thing that can really hold you back is if you just like, yeah, get bored and run out of energy in the gym. But if it's different muscle groups, if you have the mental discipline and good nutritional strategies to stay energized when you're in the gym, it's probably going to make almost no difference.
Although the new cycle, the day, the optional day 5 is, and I don't know if she's talking about this day specifically, but the optional day 5 now, I chose a different format. I chose a 40-minute EMOM. So it's like people know they can come in and they just set a 40-minute clock and they're going to get the right amount of volume on the body parts that they need. But if you did 2 40-minute EMOMs back to back, that'd be pretty brutal.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty brutal. That'd be a big session. You can't get it done. And like Raph said, the least amount of negative consequences on body. So yeah, you could, but that day 5 would be tough.
Yeah, it's just because, you know, it's not a performance program. Okay, Ellen Grandstand, stretches or exercises to help people who sit at a laptop all day? Which I'm guessing is a lot of people.
This is a good question. I like this question because it applies to almost everyone.
Yes.
Now, there's actually a really good exercise that I picked up from an OOG. I don't know if many people listening to this would know this guy. This is an OG YouTuber, Elliot Hulse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, OG Elliot Hulse. He's just like this really He's angry, huge. Like, what nationality is he? Like Samoan or something? Half Samoan?
Yeah, he looks like I mean, he could maybe just be Black American, but I think he looks Islander.
Yeah. And he's like a famous strength coach, but really just made his name on YouTube just for calling. He was just kind of like an early David Goggins. Like, he just like put people on blast, and he would just have this really no holds barred, really raw sort of no unfiltered, no editing, just yelling at the camera about some sort of subject. And they're just mad entertaining videos. But he had a really good video once I watched for neck strength and posture, because he trained a lot of like NFL guys and trained a lot of rugby players.
He had like an underground gym. There's early underground gyms.
Yeah. And he had this exercise which helps to train the deep flexors in your neck, which get really stretched and really weak from a forward head position, which is sitting at a desk. So basically what you have to do is you have to go up against a flat surface like a wall, which is probably the easiest and best thing for people to find, or a pole, I guess. Put your spine up against the pole or the wall. And then basically what you're doing is you put your tongue on the roof of your mouth and you close your mouth, and you're trying to give yourself a double chin and flatten the back of your neck. So you're basically from the base of your neck all the way up to kind of the halfway up your skull. You're trying to flatten that by making it as deep a double chin as possible on the wall or the pole. And what that does, and you're supposed to hold there and compress as hard as possible. I can't remember the exact sets and reps, but I think I want to say it was like maybe 5 minutes, 5 minute AMRAP, as much as you can do it. And you get some really deep cramping in your neck there. And that helps to strengthen those muscles to get really stretched and weak from a forward head position. And it can be really helpful for people's posture. And when it comes to posture, you're not going to necessarily, I'd say most people are never going to fix their posture trying to just consciously fix their posture. You need strength training, strength exercises to really just train the muscles that are weak, that will eventually then sit and hold in a position nicely, rather than just trying to sit there for an hour in good posture. That's generally not going to work. So that's one exercise I find is pretty useful, pretty helpful. The other one that I would add in as well is single arm bridges. What's another name for them?
Do you mean a side plank?
Not a side plank, like a single arm bridge. So you kind of both feet flat. Is it like a twisting bear or whatever? We used to do it in the flows. Oh,
yeah, for sure.
I think it's called a single arm bridge.
Yeah, it's like a thoracic bridge. Single arm thoracic bridge, yeah.
Yeah, that exercise is really good, because one thing that gets really stiff from sitting is your T-spine.
Yes.
But I don't really like heaps of T-spine stretches because they're so passive. And so you want some strengthening exercise. So doing some long hold for some single arm bridges is really good for strengthening your T-spine, strengthening your kind of arm muscles and all your joints, your shoulder joint, as well as kind of getting the rotation that you're limiting by sitting at a desk for too long.
So yeah, I agree. It's actually the ultimate like anti-sitting exercise.
It is really good.
If you just Google single arm thoracic bridge, you see like a million videos of people doing it, because you also get the hips.
Yes.
You're opening up your hips as well, and like you're actively stretching the front of your hips, switching on your glutes at the same time, hamstrings as well, and then you're rotating, opening up your thoracic spine. Like, yeah, it's
I really like
and it. It's really active.
Yeah.
And if you're really stiff, you're gonna have a really really really
I've
hard
seen
time.
Some pretty bad single arm bridges.
Man, I would say there's probably the best one. The only other one I'll mention, I haven't tried it myself, but a guy at the gym recently got one of those things that like buzzes you when you get out of position.
Oh yeah.
And like he had really bad back pain, right, to the point where they couldn't come into the gym. Went to see someone, like couldn't really get it fixed. But he was like, the guy was like, oh look, I think you're in bad posture. So he bought this thing online. It's quite expensive, but like it buzzes you when you get out of posture. And just kept buzzing him and you get better. Anyway, like his back's way better now.
Really?
So anyway, this is like just completely anecdotal. do not sponsor the show. I haven't tried it myself.
Interesting.
But yeah, he was just like, look, if I hunch over, like it just buzzes and it just gets me like back upright again and in a better posture that I know I should be doing. And yeah, he's like pretty much back to full training. And he'd been to see people and couldn't get it better. So can't remember what it's called, but I might try it myself. Because I do think just like, yeah, just staying in good posture or sitting
doesn't
up at the desk to
doesn't
me
work.
Does help.
Doesn't work.
What?
Oh, you're saying it does help?
No, I'm saying like if you have that stuff, if you're out of posture all day, it just makes it harder.
Yeah.
It's going to make it more to undo, if you really set yourself up in a bad one.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely actually doing some strengthening, which is why I like that single arm thoracic bridge so much, because it's actually a kind of a strength exercise.
Right.
When you're doing it, properly. Okay. Last one is, she wants a review on the red light back machine. That's the red light machine. We have a podcast coming out with Andy Mann about the red light machine.
Okay.
And we've recorded that. That'll probably come out in like a month.
Yeah.
Lockie's been trying it. I have one coming in the mail and I will try it properly. And then so we'll know soon.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll give you a review on that later.
Okay, incredible. Yeah, guys, cool. And we'll add right now is Blue Blocks is the company that supplies the red light machine.
Yes.
Probably
they've
not.
They've called really, it Hive.
It's called Hive. So, haven't talked about it much on the show. If you know about red light, this is for you. If you're not sure about red light, I'll probably just wait and listen to the show with Andy and you'll see if it's
positive for
you. Yeah,
I think so. I thought about talking about it earlier, but I feel like we'll just wait for that interview. It's probably
I would say it's probably one of the more exciting things I've heard about in a really, really long time.
For sure.
In terms of stuff, it's nothing to do with like blocking blue light or anything like that.
No.
So if you want in advance of that, I would like look up some of the research on blue light, on red light. And the benefits it can be for your body, and also the benefits on infrared, near infrared light as well.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting. It's definitely more useful than I thought, and there's a lot more to it than I thought as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But for now, at least, if you guys are sitting in front of a computer, I mean, just doing a podcast again with Andy and talking about light just reinforces how important managing your light environment is. And for most of us, the big thing for most of us is at night we are getting way too much screen time. And it's as little as 1 second of exposure to blue light and green light from artificial sources at night sets back your melatonin secretion by 20 minutes. 1 second, 20 minutes. So you can imagine a whole movie basically not secreting any melatonin. And he's saying, as a result, delaying that melatonin secretion is going to alter your sleep cycle and when you wake up and when you sleep. So some people they say, oh, I fall asleep really easily, but then I just wake up and I can't get back to sleep. Well, that's because your melatonin secretion timing is all off. So you're not staying in the correct sleep cycles for longer because your body's not secreting it at the right time. So
yeah, the way he put it made so much, I had never actually really heard this before. He was saying that like, yeah, the peak of the secretion of melatonin is at like 2 to 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's obviously why if you wake up at that time, like it hurts, right? Yeah. It's not fun. But when you have, and I was like stressing out about this all night, the day after this show, because I had this, when you have too much light exposure in the night, it pushes that back. Because it thinks now like, oh, the light, you know, the sun went down at like 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Sun actually went down at, you know, 7 p.m., yeah. Right? So, you've pushed it back 4 hours. So, that peak secretion might now be at like 5 a.m., 6 a.m., which is when you're waking up. You do not want it. You do not want it when you're waking up.
So, I feel shit.
So, yeah. That's why that, yeah, even if you get to bed on time at the right time, if you had too much light exposure running up to that bedtime, it can just still mess up that timing.
Get it right, guys. Pick up a pair of the fashionable lenses, the nighttime glow. That's at blueblocks.com, blublox.com. Our code is MMP, and that's going to get you 15% off. Now, we don't actually have a Netflix documentary or review for you today. We will have some stuff ready, but we do have a product review that we want to tell you about. But for next week, what will we watch, Raf, so people know, so they can keep up with us?
Yeah, definitely the best one, Challenger, The Final Flight. It's a series on the spaceship that crashed, I want to say like maybe 20, 30 years ago. That is going to be huge. It's like in the top 10. I'm very, very excited for it. And if you haven't seen The Social Network, what's it called? Social Dilemma. I would very highly
recommend
you go back and watch that.
Not many Netflix documentaries are still being talked about a week later.
And that was actually a Netflix original. So,
Yeah,
that, they're really stepping up their game over there at Netflix. I actually heard an interview with the founder of Netflix. And it's interesting, like, even though they're so popular now on Netflix, he was saying, like, the way they see it is, I think YouTube still gets 80%+ of the video watching time.
Really?
So, he's like, man, he's like, haven't even scratched the surface. You know, they're killing us. So more is coming from them. They're looking like to seriously take over.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that. This product was sent to us by good friends of ours, Heather, she is Jack Taylor PR. If anyone's an influencer, they want a good company to connect with. Jack Taylor PR is a great company. But anyway, she sent us this product. It's called Pulp Culture. When she sent it to us, it looked like kombucha. And I was like, oh, this is cool. It's called like Recovery. One was called Vitality. One, cool labeling and had the ingredients on the front. Ginseng root and vanilla extract and, you know, vitamin C. And I was like, oh, cool. It's like some kind of drink. I cracked the seal and I think, man, this thing smells really alcoholic. And I drank half the first one and I was buzzed.
Mm.
And I'm more than certain at this point, I'm drinking alcohol. But I'm like, this is not alcohol. Anyway, I look, it's alcohol. Even you didn't think it was alcohol.
Yeah, I didn't think it was alcohol.
You're like, nah, dude, it's not wet. You said, oh, no, you've got the alcoholic one. This is a non-alcoholic one. And I had to point the alcohol bit to you even more. So basically, this drink is, what they've tried to create here is a fermented beverage, different process to fermenting alcohol somehow. And they put all these nutrients and vitamins and minerals in it so that you can get the feeling of alcohol. So you can get buzzed, or I guess you can get drunk if you want to drink enough of them, and not wake up with like the crazy hangover and not do all the crazy damage. I mean, you're still going to do damage, I'd imagine, drinking alcohol. But
it's still going to like affect your sleep or whatever, but
dramatically minimized with this product. I guess like the healthy person's alcohol, if that's even a thing. But anyway, so I guess we can rate it on the taste and stuff. We're not huge alcohol drinkers, so I can't imagine ever making this a big habit. But if it was between that, getting drunk on that and getting drunk on vodka, I'd probably pick that, you know, just because it's just I'm not going to feel like shit the next day. So interesting. Company out of LA. It's a startup. So Pulp Culture. There's a few factors that go into it. Taste-wise, it still tastes like alcohol. So if you don't really like the taste of alcohol, it's not going to be a good one for you. It's not like you're drinking this sweet, delicious kombucha or whatever. No, it still tastes like alcohol. But it's kind of like a refreshing alcohol. It's not like overly strong. It doesn't taste like an overwhelming spirit. And then obviously packaging is pretty good. We didn't drink enough of them to kind of be like, all right, this amount would normally make me feel pretty shit and I don't feel that bad. So maybe we'll have to do that to give it a proper review. Oh, but overall, I think it was pretty decent. I think if you're looking for some kind of alternative there in the alcohol market, yeah, could be a good option.
Yeah, well, I was able to drink a whole can and then go immediately out for a run. So, definitely makes you feel like pretty good.
Well, I guess maybe because like the heavy taste of like beer or spirits is like not on your mouth.
I would not have felt like that whatsoever. So,
yeah.
If they had this at places when I was out, I would definitely buy it.
Yeah. So, I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I just don't love the taste of alcohol, so I didn't love it. But if you like it, then I think you might. I'd probably give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. There you go. So that's Pulp Culture. You guys can check that out. We're done. Not sponsored, no codes. Unpaid product review. So there you go. All right, guys. So we are next month launching Project Fitness. So there will be a full Thursday series of fitness-related episodes, which you can look out for and be excited for. Like I said at the start, we are on YouTube right now. So you can check the video version of these podcasts out. We're putting out more stuff on the IGTV as well. So you can get excited by that. And then, yeah, everything we talked about, all the sponsors in the description of this episode, all the links will be there. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.